Podcast. Today's conversation is with the director of the Nebraska Athletic Performance Lab, Chris Bach. Chris and I delve into some specifics in terms of the work he is doing with the Performance Lab, how he views his role, his approach in terms of working with 23 different sports at the University of Nebraska, and a host of other topics. It's a good one. So appreciate you taking the time to give us a listen here at Elite Forum. And without further ado, Chris Bach.
Why skip? Going after Chris the whole time. Something like that. So that all makes sense, though.
Yeah, we're good.
Cool. So where I thought we'd start with round two is, how would you describe the Nebraska Athletic Performance Lab, mainly to people who are in this world, right? At a super high level, everyone's going to get it. But down like a level deeper, a lot of the people that are going to be listening are going to be, you know, people that could be colleagues of yours in a different universe. So how would you go about describing that to those folks?
Yeah, so I mean, kind of on the global scale of things, I think it's more of, it's really just an in-house sports science lab. To dive down into more of the details, we have a 25,000 square foot lab located in the football stadium, in Memorial Stadium, that has all sorts of capabilities. So I think it was originally designed with with a really strong biomechanics background kind of behind it. So there's a kind of, we've got motion capture cameras, a full-blown motion capture system that we can move around to different surfaces, whether it be on track surfaces or turf or basketball court.
Is that the Qualisys system?
That's the Qualisys system, yep. And then we run things in Visual 3D, the software, and kind of break it down really depending on the sport, depending on the question and the project that we have up. So mainly with the intent of just answering the questions that our coaches are seeking. Answering the questions our coaches are asking from a performance standpoint, could potentially be from more of an athletic standpoint or athletic medicine standpoint, from ACL injury risk or other factors as well. On top of the biomechanics lab, we also have a whole bunch of other equipment in the lab for force plates that are embedded in the different surfaces. That we sometimes use paired up with the biomechanics lab for kinetics and kinematic analysis. On top of that, we also use it obviously for strength and conditioning purposes, where we can do force velocity profiling or certain things like that. We also have our own in-house bioscience lab, which is really unique. So we can run blood, saliva, urine, whatever it is that we want to, for different biomarkers. So whether it be testosterone and cortisol or SIGA or other factors, other biomarkers that we may feel have kind of performance indicators or potentially injury risk or sickness, those types of markers, we can take a look at those things as well. There's also kind of a whole cardio area in there, so we can do your basic cardiometabolic testing, VO2 max, lactate thresholds. We even have an EKG in there. If we wanted to pair up with that with athletic medicine, we can certainly do those things. And then we have dynamometers from kind of a rehab process, things like the Biodex or Human Track or those types of things. Not Human Track, HUMAC. We just kind of have a lot of those different areas, and it's all kind of blended, and it was really well designed so that we can move things onto different surfaces and see how athletes are going to perform in their natural environment, which is really important. So rather than just testing them in kind of your clinical ex-phys lab that you may do in a lot of research settings, we can have a basketball player, for example, shoot a step back jumper marked up biomechanics off a force plate and start to analyze, how are they actually going to be moving when they are put back to practice, as opposed to just their quad hamstring strength on a Biodex. So we have that. And then our lab, our team right now is built up of seven sports scientists now from different areas. So You have physiology, kind of a sports nutrition background that I have. We've also got biomechanists. We have motor control, motor learning specialists. We have biosystems engineering. We have wearable experts, and continuing to just add to that as well. So
would it be fair to say, put words in your mouth as a summary and you tell me if I'm accurate. Obviously, we work with a fair number of universities, and it's not always the case that people have an array of tools they can select from that they think that tool is the best one to answer a particular question. You seem to be uniquely positioned in that. You have that array of tools, and so you're able to select from those really to apply it in the best way possible.
That's the idea. Yeah. We're really fortunate with kind of the resources that they've put into the lab. I mean, I think the fact that you have a 25,000 square foot sports science lab embedded in the prime real estate of the Memorial Stadium, I think that speaks wonders to kind of the amount of resources and the investment they've put into what they believe sports science can be to help the student athlete in Nebraska. Now, interesting that you say that, because I fight very hard to make it not a check out these bells and whistles, look at all the cool things that we have. It's much more how can we actually utilize these tools to answer the questions, to apply it and actually provide information, insight for our coaches to make better decisions, whether that be head coaches or assistant coaches or anybody on the sports support staff, from strength and conditioning, sports and nutrition, athletic medicine, you name it.
Except for maybe when a recruit's coming through.
Yeah. I mean, it's absolutely a recruiting aspect. There.
I joke. The story I often tell is going to be one of, there's a way you can have that conversation to say, we have all these tools. We can utilize these tools to make your child a better athlete, better player, etc. You can kind of meld that conversation together nicely, tell a nice recruiting story, and actually have it be true.
Yes, you absolutely can. And you know, a whole other aspect of that is I'm kind of a firm believer that, and I've experienced it firsthand here at Nebraska, is we have all these tools, we have all these capabilities and all this equipment. But a big problem has been in the past of taking that to a coach and saying, I jokingly refer to it in the lab with my colleagues, it's called the Cheesecake Factory menu, right? If we hand the coach all of the different options that we're capable of doing, it's overwhelming, like a Cheesecake Factory menu, right? And so they take a look at it and they don't know where to start. And so one of the things that we've really tried to focus on over the last year and a half or so is really going into their environment, talking with the coaches, and more just asking questions to figure out what are their needs, what do they find important, what's the language that they speak, and then it's kind of our job to come in, identify certain gaps, certain areas that we feel like maybe we can improve a little bit, a lot, and work cohesively within their kind of the team that they've already got built. Since we actually kind of are on the outside. You know, we're not hired by...
What do you mean you're on the outside?
Well, we're not hired by any one of the individual coaches, right? So we work with all 23 sports at Nebraska, right? So coming in, you know, we're welcomed into a lot of the teams, but that being said, you know, we're initially that outsider coming in and introducing, getting to know everybody on the staff, if it's a new staff, for example. So in that sense, you're an outsider, but... going to them and just figuring out what they believe in, what's their philosophy, what they find important, allows us to maybe better ask better questions or provide a better need for them a little bit.
So let's lean into that a little bit more. So you and I have been known to get coffee together. Mm-hmm. We have our inside jokes, right? One of the discussions you and I have had, I've had with a variety of other coaches, there's this phrase, sports science. Right.
Yes.
And it's a good debate, sometimes in seriousness, sometimes over cocktails. What does that mean? Right. And then the follow on is applied sports science.
Yeah.
So for you, what's a sports scientist? right? And then, not to get Wittgenstein, I know I referenced him before, but like literally day to day in real life, what is applied sports science?
I'm sitting here with a smile on my face because I've had that conversation with others as well. And, you know, at this point, the way it's being used, I'm confused as to what the hell it is.
That's why I said for you, the important prepositional phrase in that.
It's, you know, it's an interesting question and one that I've kind of gone back and forth about. And honestly, my perspective has changed since I've been here with the team that we have kind of assembled at Nebraska, because we're all viewed as sports scientists bringing scientific principles or scientific methodology to the training process or to the whole performance realm, if you will. But if you look at all of our backgrounds, you have physiology, you've got psychology, you've got biomechanics, you've got people from all these different areas, even engineers that are part of our team. And so what is a sports scientist and what is sports science? You know, in many ways, I think it's really just a conversation. I really do. I think it's really just a conversation amongst the performance staff. Can we help facilitate, and we not being just sports scientists necessarily, but sports science is really just applying scientific methodology.
I'm gonna have to interrupt and say you cannot use the word, right, applied when I'm asking you to define applied sports science.
I cannot use the word applied because, God forbid, sports science is actually applied.
Well, you can't use word in its own definition.
But no, I mean,
Try harder, what I'm asking.
Fair enough. I really, like I said, I think it really just comes down to communication and conversation. I think sports science is a conversation. Can the individual parts of a team, strength coach, athletic medicine, everybody, can they work cohesively together and have the conversation to identify areas of need? And then from there, once you have kind of put together a methodology to best answer that question, it's really all it is to me. And I think it kind of exists in different forms depending on the question or the problems within that team or within those athletes, for example. But you know, at the end of the day, it's all about relationships, communication, and just having conversation. And if you can start to link some of these areas together that have traditionally been siloed, then I think you start to, as they would say on Duck Dynasty, now you're cooking with peanut oil, right? I'm from the South, so give me that one.
Yeah, I don't know that one.
Okay.
I don't know that one. That one's not anything I have in my
it's
repertoire.
It's been years, actually, since that show, I believe. But
is it still on?
I don't know.
Okay. Yeah. So you're not a diehard Duck Dynasty guy.
I'm not a diehard Duck Dynasty fan.
You just had that quote.
And I wouldn't say that that's from Duck Dynasty. It's just more popularized because of that show. But nonetheless, I digress.
Yeah, that's all right.
I do think it's more of just a conversation.
That's part of what we do here on this podcast is find a good tangent and keep going. Since I know nothing about Duck Dynasty, I was probably going to hit a dead end pretty quick.
I'm not saying that that's a terrible thing.
So for me, right, the way you talked through that, you kind of went from what is sports science to kind of jumping into let's talk about applying it, right? The real meat of that is getting an entire staff together, not just in your case, the staff at the NAPL, right? But you're going to get buy-in from, is it 23 sports? Like in an ideal world, right?
Yes.
All 23 sports at Nebraska buy into, would it be fair to say services? The services and expertise
that
the NAPL can provide.
Absolutely.
And then within each one of those 23 sports, that's a separate conversation. Those coaches are separate people, right? They have separate needs. And you, in a perfect world, right, you'll deflect this because it's a compliment, right? But you have the tools and the expertise to deliver on those 23 separate needs.
That's the idea. Yeah.
It's Christmas. Let me gift wrap something for you.
Okay. Well, yes. That is what we try to do. Yes.
Can you walk folks through a recent example, like a singular question that you've worked on answering for a particular sport?
So we just got a new baseball staff that came in here, completely new staff, and just kind of talking through some of their different experiences. As you know, these coaches come from all over. Some come from top-end programs that have maybe similar resources or parts of the resources that we have available. Others come from maybe, you know, community colleges or D3 schools or something where funding and the technologies that we have available are maybe not as prevalent. I'll just say that. So it allows us to come in and figure out maybe what their backgrounds were, what are things that they've done in the past that kind of fall under that quote unquote sports science umbrella, and figure out, okay, what have you done? What do you like? What are the aspects there? Do we feel like we can improve on that? Do we feel like we can provide that? Do we feel like it's relevant for performance or, you know, you name it? And if so, then that kind of gives us that initial conversation, that starting piece to speak their language, to build that relationship and identify areas that, hey, you find this important, let's start there and then let the conversation grow. So to bring back to the baseball coaches, we've had a great relationship with them. Some of them have had some small biomechanics background. So maybe it's some piece of equipment where you strap it on kind of like a K-vest to get an idea for the sequencing of a swing, for example. We will then take that and maybe we feel like we can get a little bit more information or certain things out of bringing them into our lab and doing a full-blown biomechanical analysis by putting them into our biomechanics system and putting the markers on different anatomical landmarks, right? From that, we think we can then maybe break down the information and provide them with information that they've liked and they know how to use, and then also potentially have other information that we can just slowly add on as we work together kind of down that. With that, and while they were up there having conversation, just again, I come back to the conversation piece and the relationship side of things. Base stealing came up, the idea of base stealing. So we said, well, actually, we've got some ideas here where we can take the 1080 sprint machine and we can start to take a look at their force profile during the acceleration phase, the acceleration profile for the athletes, and identify maybe strengths and weaknesses, mechanical strengths and weaknesses, horizontal force, all that stuff with our athletes, and start to identify from one, maybe a talent identification standpoint, who are maybe our guys who give us the best chance of stealing, who are maybe not, but then can internally with that, can we say, okay, these guys are really good out of the hole, but their top end speed is low versus these guys are maybe the opposite. And we can communicate that among strength and conditioning, baseball coaches, cue them up to see certain things from a technique standpoint, work with the strength coach to identify maybe, hey, here are some areas that these guys can work on that we feel like give us the best chance to improve their performance on the path, right? So those are just kind of some different examples of how we've maybe worked with a team recently.
So let's dig in. Let's dig in a little deeper to that. So what was that process like? So not everyone listening is going to have a 1080p.
Yep.
Right?
1080p is the pixels on your TV.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Whoops.
Skip clearly needs to upgrade to a 4K TV.
I guess so. I'm old school.
Yeah. 1080 sprint.
Yep. Not everyone's going to have a 1080 sprint. Not everyone's going to have that device. Not everyone's in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I think an added level of nuance, right?
Yeah.
Might be worth just kind of walking
for sure.
Through. So,
Well, to add to that, though, to interrupt you quickly.
Please.
I mean, we were kind of doing, in taking a look at some of the stuff that they were doing down at Altus, particularly Chidi down there, he was doing some videos and some essentially just video technique breakdown that it's really not that different than coming out of the blocks as a sprinter. Once you get that initial pivot, then acceleration is acceleration. And a lot of the factors, a lot of the technique variables and things like that that you're looking for are very similar. So we kind of started to blend those two things. So just to throw that out there, we try to blend a lot of the topics. We'll take a look at maybe the kinematic sequencing of a volleyball spike jump, for example, and use that, although it's very different than a baseball swing, it's still sequencing. And we can kind of use ideas that we get from different projects to maybe better fine-tune our questions, our analysis, all that stuff in other areas. So yes, it's individually fine-tuned, but there's certainly a lot of crossover between sports as well.
For sure. Let's tease apart the baseball piece specifically to give people a better, more detailed idea of how you actually went about that, right? Because what I heard you say, right, starts to cross the line between I can be a very good baseball player, I can read the game well, maybe I'm not as athletic, right? Reading an individual game, being a better player, can be differentiated from the smaller athletic pieces inside of the game. And I hear you saying you're working to tease some of those things apart. So in terms of stealing bases, how did you go about doing that?
Yeah, so it's a great point. And you add in the factors of how well are you reading the pitcher and those different factors of the game. Absolutely, completely recognize that those are critical aspects of the overall success as to whether or not you're going to steal that base, particularly when you're working with such fractions of a second. That being said, we felt like we kind of needed to tease those factors out to just take a look at the physical capabilities of these athletes, because that is something, if we can take a look at just that, then that gives us maybe a better roadmap as to how to target them from a strength and conditioning standpoint, and giving the coaches, which is what ultimately what they were looking for, is what are the physical capabilities of these athletes right now and what can we do to potentially improve them. Conversations at the front end are certainly with the coaching staff of, hey, the reading of the pitcher and all of that stuff, that is more in your realm than it is in this particular realm. So we're going to separate that on the front.
When you say this particular realm, what were you referring to?
Well, we were talking about...
Your hand gestures were great. No one could see them.
Yes. I forget that I'm on a podcast.
No, I do too. I'm trying to be better.
Sitting in a coffee shop. Just kind of the physical preparation of the athlete. The physical analysis of, hey, what are their capabilities? Let's take a look at the acceleration profile that each athlete has, trying to take out the other factors of it. Because absolutely, how they're reading a pitcher or understanding the game, yeah, is critical. But once you start to add the complexities of team sport in particular and all the other factors, yeah, good luck with that and kind of teasing things out. I mean, just defining performance in a team sport, how do you do that? You could score 50 points against some high school team and 20 points against the Boston Celtics. And you might perform much, much better in the Boston Celtics game. So you can't use a lot of those particular factors.
So to the base stealing.
Yeah.
Did you – I mean, there's the ability to do it in the lab. Yeah. Now, with a 1080 sprint, probably also take that out to the field. Like, how did you handle going about collecting the data you wanted to collect?
Mm-hmm. So take a step back here. And in many ways, instead of the Nebraska Athletic Performance Lab, I see it as the Nebraska Athletic Performance Center.
Why are you drawing that differentiation?
Yeah, because while we have the lab there, I think a lot of our work happens externally.
People to think about it as just inside that building.
Yes.
That's fair.
So yeah, that it's maybe the center hub for what we do and our central location, our home base, as some people talk about it. But I actually prefer that we're not up there very often. We're out at practices, having conversations.
You want to get people out of that. We're the guys with trench coats and pocket protectors.
Lab coats, but trench coats possibly, I guess. Well, that's another option. Yeah.
I painted a different picture. That's not the one I was looking to do.
So with the base stealing, we went out to the field and we just put the 1080 right behind first base and kind of had them take the lead off and just drew a line and had them go on a
what
signal.
What was the line?
We just had a line there to make sure we had a standardized.
You can't get a gigantic lead.
No, they weren't halfway down, right?
Every inch counts.
Yeah. But, yeah, so then we took that, and then we just had them run through the base. We didn't actually have them slide. Obviously, another factor as techniques and all that other stuff go, that we're leaving more on the coaches. We just wanted to see how do the guys get out of the hole, what top end speed do they hit. And we analyzed.
Did they react to a pitcher?
They did not. We just had
you
them
said go.
Yeah. And we had all of it filmed as well, high-speed camera, so that we could say, hey, look, let's pair up what we're seeing with what we're getting from the 1080. And some of that was really helpful because it allowed us to provide, we actually gave the coaches 6 cues. And we said, hey, look, when you're out there at practice and you don't have a 1080 hooked up, you don't have all these other technologies, here are things to look for that we feel like you can focus on. And all of this, again, is conversations with the coach. What are they liking? What are they not liking? Let's give and take a little bit here and understand where they are in the whole process. But they've been phenomenal.
The baseball staff?
Yeah.
What are some things? Remember like specifics in terms of what they liked about the process, what didn't they like? Is that what you mean by there were things they liked and things they didn't?
What I mean by it is they were just completely open and in the conversation and asking questions. And once you have coaches asking questions, then kind of you're in an ideal scenario.
Do you remember the cues?
Yep. So some of them off the top of my head, obviously we were looking for triple extension, foot below or slightly behind the hips, progressive trunk tilt.
Speaking someone in the language of a biomechanist?
A little bit, yeah. But we showed them the video and had them, because the video, I found my personal take on it is really key. Because we can show maybe biomechanics and we can show force curves and all this other stuff and different colors and everything. It looks great. And maybe coaches find it really interesting and cool on the front end. But then that wears off and the cool factor goes away. And at the end of the day, they are taught and trained to see things with their own two eyes. And so if we can pair up the video with what the graphs and all this other stuff, the numbers are telling us, it helps them connect to, hey, this is what I see every day. I see where you're talking about. Here's a video. Now that when I'm out of practice, I don't need all this technology. We've got an idea for what we can do, and we can make changes and decisions and corrections on the fly is the idea. And this process is still ongoing.
Sure.
You know, and conversations with the strength coach. I've got a meeting with him tomorrow to go over some different ideas on that specific project, actually.
So would it... This may be an unfair summary, so I'll say it. You know, shoot it out of the sky if you need to.
Duck hunt.
But would it... Yeah. I'm trying to stick with the Duck Dynasty thing you brought up.
That's
so fair. Would it be fair to say that you almost developed a rudimentary base-stealing profile of that team? It seems like a bit of a stretch.
Yes.
But... I'm going to put words in your mouth and you knock them back. So at a certain level, you may begin to start to establish the subset of players on the team mm-hmm. that are minimally viable base stealers.
Yeah.
How fair, unfair is that statement?
When it's so direct like that, I think the initial scientist in me wants to take steps back. I think what you're getting at is along the lines of what we tried to do, though. We essentially bucketed the team into 3 different groups. The groups that were, hey, these are kind of your faster guys. And it actually worked out well based on time,
right,
which is only what we were looking for. At the end of the day, it's about how fast you get to the second base, right? It's not about acceleration profiles and all that other stuff. If you can get there in an equal amount of time, then those two athletes are essentially the same, I would argue. Not how we can train those two athletes. Those are 2 different things, which is what we were trying to identify. I see some thoughts going through your head right now.
Yeah.
Wanting to fight
there's
back.
Not fight. I want to tease it apart even more. But I think you may have been trying to get to my thought with your little clarification there at the end. So let's not dwell. Let's not dwell. I'm bad at that.
Fair enough.
So you have three groups. I'm gonna name those groups, and if I'm unfair, please tell me. But yep. So there's probably a we could aggressively look to some steel bases with group A.
Yes.
Maybe in the right scenario with group B. Group C potentially is the it doesn't really matter how well they read the game. They literally just don't have enough horsepower to have a strong probability of stealing a base.
Yeah. So A and C is essentially what our data showed us.
The middle groups are always hardest.
The B, those were actually kind of the intrigue athletes mm-hmm. in the sense that their timing wasn't equal to maybe group A.
Timing in terms of
how fast they get from point A to point B. Yes. Their timing maybe wasn't in group A. It wasn't in group C, but there were certain factors about them that we felt like were really intriguing. So, for example, with I think we had a couple athletes where by the time they got to second base, their top end speed were second and third in the overall team of maybe I don't remember how many athletes we tested, maybe 20 athletes, something like that. So by the time they got there, they were moving faster than anybody else. So
you're saying Bolt. It took a while to get going, but...
Yes, potentially. Yeah, essentially that's what it was.
Oversimplification, but...
So we identified those athletes of, hey, maybe there's something here that if we can work on the acceleration phase, they will go from this middle kind of purgatory, if you will, and put them into a group where, hey, they have some capabilities as far as velocity, accelerate, whatever it might be.
Right.
We've identified these,
right.
And it allows us to maybe target their training a little bit better, to focus on certain areas to maybe help them get from, group B to group A.
So B almost has a subgroup of high top end speed. Slow roll getting going.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
But that's why the video is really important.
Sorry, go ahead.
That's why the video is really important because maybe they just have really terrible technique. And we can just identify that on the front end.
Absolutely.
But if we take a look at just the 1080 data,
right.
You don't see that. So that's
for sure.
That's why the video itself we have found has been critical on almost everything that we do. We collect video with it so that we can see how things are changing.
Why
they're happening.
Was anybody in group B someone who'd established from just a stats perspective? Like, was anybody in group B coming into the new year knowing that they were like the leading base stealer on the team last year?
I can't remember off the top of my head. Yeah, I can't remember.
That would be interesting.
The other aspect of this, and I think it's actually really important, is let's not sit here and pretend that you and I and all these other, again, quote, unquote, sports scientists, right, are doing things that are just truly groundbreaking on every front, right? We're out there and we're testing, and there are some guys, and you sit there and you go, okay, yeah, like he's one of your top guys. And, you can probably steal bases with him. I don't need 1080 data to tell me that. Coaches see it with their own two eyes, right? Same thing on the other end. You go, hey, coach, not sure you want to be stealing bases with that guy this year, And, of course, they see that. They know that, right? But it's using this other technology to kind of dive down a little bit deeper and start to identify, hey, for all these guys, this is what we have right now. How can we kind of essentially target our training, target our coaching, all that other stuff to pull the most out of them and get the best performance we can to help everybody, help the team as a whole?
Well, to dovetail on your soapbox, is that a phrase? One of the things that will happen often with Elite Form specifically will be if someone's feeling a bit skeptical, they'll say, well, I can tell you who our more powerful guys are.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, of course you can.
Mm-hmm.
Like sometimes what data will do is simply confirm what a coach via his experience has often deduced. And that's okay.
Absolutely.
Doesn't mean it can't help you in other places.
A lot of times that's what they want to use the data for.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
Confirmation.
There's a lot of ways. Data is just data. There's a lot of ways you can, and I'm having fun with this when I say it, apply it.
Yeah.
So let's go back to base stealing a little bit.
Okay.
So is there any thought to, or have you looked at this idea of looking at like a Ricky Henderson, arguably the greatest base stealer of all time, and then seeing if you looked at that same video, right, and those six cues, would he check all those boxes?
We took a look at some professional base stealers. I didn't specifically look at Ricky Henderson.
Oh, how do you not look at Ricky Henderson? I'm going to date myself. But how do you not look at Ricky Henderson?
What's funny is actually I remember Ricky Henderson on the cover of Sports Illustrated reading an article. Oh, gosh. I don't know how many years ago this was now. Close to 20 years ago. And I remember a saying that he had. Is they said, would you rather strike out looking or strike out swinging? And he said, 100% of the time, I'd like to strike out looking. And they said, why? And he said, because then I can say, if I would have swung, I would have hit it. And I was like, that's so perfect. That's so great.
Yep.
So we did take a look at some professional baseball players base stealing, but maybe we need to go back now, take a look at Ricky Henderson. But we did.
I'd consider it a personal favor, if you would.
Yeah, fair enough. I think we can do that.
No, when I was a kid, backyard, growing up in Indiana, right? We'd play wiffle ball.
Uh-huh.
And I would always mimic, right, various batting styles, et cetera.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
And Hendo always let off for me. He was my guy.
I like it.
So,
We did the same. I remember Albert Bell. We did all kinds of...
Did you get in fights, too?
I didn't get in
Albert
fights.
Albert Bell style?
Hothead? Yeah. I grew up in Chattanooga during the same days as kind of... The Crime Dog, Fred McGriff,
yeah,
Greg Maddux, Tom Glavin, all those guys. That was fun days. Fun days down there.
Dave Justice.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They had a squad.
They were all right. Well, if you bring up Maddux, there's a guy where initial metrics, no one's that impressed.
There's probably a bunch of baseball guys out there right now who are like, actually, my metrics, show this or that. Yeah. I get where you're going.
I can clarify that, right? On a Jugs gun.
Yes.
Maddux, not going to rank at the top.
Yes.
As a pitcher. So we can slide into, right, what reads out on the 1080. Mm-hmm. Sprint, not P.
Yes.
Right. Versus reading the rest of the game.
Essentially,
Maddux as a pitcher. All day.
Essentially, what you're getting at is... athletes are not lab rats, right?
For sure.
You know, and you can't just take a VO2 max and determine who's going to win the marathon.
Have I told you my Nolan Ryan story?
No.
So you'll appreciate this. It fits right in with what we're talking about. So coach baseball way back in the day, right? Uh-huh. And very quality high school program. And we're driving to a game. And I'm just trying to get the guys to think about baseball, right? They're thinking about everything else under the sun. And so I basically asked the guys if they could have anybody pitch on any given day that's currently pitching in the major leagues, who would they pick? And Nolan Ryan had just struck out 8 million people in a game, right? And a bunch of them said Nolan Ryan. And I got kind of up in arms about it. I was like,
that's
why?
Surprising.
That I got up in arms? Oh, yeah. Pretty passive about a lot of things. And so I pointed out that he basically had just a little bit better than a 500 record. And so, you know, this is one of those bar conversations that can go on for hours.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
But on any given day, my question to them was, why would you pick somebody with just over a slight, you know, slightly over a 500 record? No one had a great answer. And I appreciate the fact that guy just threw pebbles. But, and... if you went to the mound, he could take you. But the point remains, from a wins-losses standpoint, they're better people to pick.
Yeah, we could go down this path
it's
so far.
Oh, it's a wormhole.
As far as, are you judging wins and losses as the ultimate deciding factor. And what I bring back here is more of the, in the support staff's strength and conditioning, sports science, athletic medicine, you may just, maybe you don't have a Nolan Ryan, a Clayton Kershaw, or maybe you don't have a Tom Brady or a Drew Brees. Your team's just losing because you don't have the horses. You got a bunch of donkeys in the Derby, right? Doesn't have any reflection as to whether or not those individuals are doing their job better or worse than the teams or the, you know, that are winning.
It's always a more dynamic conversation than a single measurement.
We could go far down this rabbit hole.
Oh, absolutely.
But I'm glad that you took pride in defeating a bunch of high schoolers in conversation and arguments.
I just take pride in good conversations. I take more pride in better arguments. Right? Back to that hitch in the quote I like to throw out. So it seems like a good time to have a drink after going down into that wormhole. You're familiar with Malort moments already.
I am familiar with Malort moments.
If I recall correctly, it's really not necessarily your favorite moment.
I'd be lying if I said it was.
Well, we appreciate you taking part anyway. Avery Klein has introduced to Elite Form a Malort and Apernol cocktail. Have you heard about this?
No, I haven't.
So it sort of lessens the palate damage a little bit. Cheers. Appreciate you coming on.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Apernol, Malort, Grapefruit Rattler, and a lemon. As we sit here, I can't give you the mixology.
Yeah.
But if you've had Apernol, it's sweet.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
I think the lemon cuts into that bitterness a little bit. And the grapefruit
probably comes just in
plays and nicely with others.
Yeah. Neutralizes maybe is the wrong word, but grapefruit plays well with a lot of
a
lot of things like that.
Maybe the next time we do this, it'll be a step two.
Okay.
So
well, it can't get any worse.
What's that?
It can't get any worse.
I don't know if I've ever heard anyone say, well, this is bad, but have you tried? No one's tried to top Malort in that way.
You know, so we have a Brazilian, actually I have two Brazilians now in the lab, and they brought me this drink, cachaça, I believe is what it is. It's like a Brazilian, I'm going to totally butcher how you explain it, but it's essentially like a Brazilian tequila. Pretty potent. I wouldn't necessarily say it's as bad as this, but straight up, just having it straight like we're doing right now, probably wouldn't suggest it either. But he came in and he made a little cocktail for me that had essentially just sugar, lime, and this, I think it's called cachaça. Totally butchering probably how you say it, but I actually liked it. It's pretty darn good.
Well, if you add enough sugar to anything, it probably changes the taste. I'll have to hunt some of that down, see what we can do. Brazilian,
yeah. We actually have a, so that's Vitor Profeta. He did his PhD in motor control, motor learning at UConn under some top guys up there. And he's from Belo Horizonte in Brazil. And actually, since he's been here, one of the things that we've tried to do is kind of increase or have an outreach in the lab a little bit. And about 4 months ago, we signed a contract with UFMG, which is a university down in Belo Horizonte, where we now have essentially some collaboration with them, where they are sending a PhD sports scientist to work in the lab for a year. And then after that, they'll send us another one. That person will go back. So they'll kind of get a year of practical experience working in our lab, bringing different skill sets to us, kind of opening up our minds to try new things and kind of hopefully keep us sharp. But yeah, so we got the new guy just started about a month ago, maybe something like that. Yeah, he's actually 12 years. He was an assistant coach on the Brazilian national team volleyball for, I think, U21 men's team. And so he brings kind of a whole volleyball skill set as far as the coaching and the technique side of things that we currently don't have in the lab. So hoping to utilize that and just kind of continue to roll that into different projects and keep things going.
Do you have other collaborations? Malort face.
Oh, yeah.
If only this was on video. Do you have other collaborations?
Not quite the Better Beer face from back in. Do you remember those commercials?
I don't.
Yeah, anyway. You got to see it, I guess.
Okay, I'll look it up. I'm sure it's on YouTube. Any other universities, international or otherwise, that you collaborate with?
No, not at the moment. Just UFMG.
Is that the kind of thing you want to also grow with what you're doing?
Yeah. So started that outreach and those conversations to have kind of set up conversations because of the capabilities that we referred to in our lab to be able to run, assays and to be able to do more of the hard science as well as having all the techniques and all that stuff that we can do. It's just a really unique opportunity for people to be able to come, get practical experience, work with teams, and have access to kind of the quality of student athletes that we have. And at the same time, we have all this data and these projects that we just don't have time to push out yet in publication. So, yeah, I just see our lab continuing to grow. I mean, getting graduate help from some of the different departments on campus now, which is cool. It's one of the things I love about being on a college campus is you're constantly surrounded by people who are trying to learn and grow and areas of expertise that no matter what you do and no matter what resources you have, you'll never be able to touch on all those areas. So it was really important for me to reach out to different researchers and folks on campus to, again, increase kind of the skill set that we have in the lab, the impact we can have on teams.
Whatever happened with Chris Caviglio in Queensland? Did you guys ever get connected on anything? Or?
We've played phone tag.
Still in
or
process.
Or email tag, I guess, yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So that'd be great.
Shout out Chris Caviglio, Queensland Academy of Sport.
Good guy.
He's a good guy. Snippet Science Podcast, if anyone wants to consume 8-minute or shorter podcasts.
Yeah.
Also big blood flow restriction guy.
Yeah.
For those interested in that. But so here's a question that I've been meaning to ask you. In personal, personal over coffee or otherwise. I shouldn't say obviously. For folks who don't know, you have an athletic background. You were an athlete.
Depends on the sense in which you say that, but yes.
Well, you're being humble, so I'll say broadly speaking. But so you have a background as an athlete. You have a background the NAPL. Make some Tennessee volunteer jokes. But is there a question for you that you would love for a coach to ask you? So a project you could then work on with the lab that you personally would find incredibly intriguing to work on? Maybe you don't have the bandwidth to do it personally, right? Or you would need that group of student athletes, right, to be able to do it right. Is there anything like that for you that just sits out there that, I'd really like to look at X?
Oh, man. Yeah, that's tough. I mean, I think, and I don't have this expertise, so I'm going to start off with that conversation.
Well, that can be a part of it, right?
Like, yes.
I can't do it, but so I know these great people at the lab.
Yeah, so I just read an article by Craig Pickering and John Kiley recently about essentially DNA, metabolomics, a lot of the omics, proteomics, all that stuff. And it kind of sent me down a reading rabbit hole. So I've been just diving into that for the last week or so. It's one of the nice things when you travel with teams is you get uninterrupted reading time and you get to catch up on certain things, which I very much enjoy. So I don't specifically have a direct question, but essentially their article was really great article. I can't remember the name of the title or the title of it right now, but if you look up Craig, he does a lot of great work.
Which will be,
and John as well.
For reference, that'll be in the show notes
okay.
that we'll create, so yeah. people will be able to get yeah. to it.
It's a great little article. Essentially, the idea is in the healthcare industry right now, there is a whole movement of personalized medicine. It's kind of the buzzword that a lot of people use. And the idea being, take that same model and essentially applying it to athletic medicine. So personalized performance medicine, or can't remember the exact terminology that they use, but I think some of that, I think we're a long ways from that. But
so let's back up a half
yeah, yeah,
step.
Yeah, yeah.
What is personalized medicine, right? So people know what you're talking about.
Yeah, okay.
And then as far as your understanding, what would that mean to apply to student athletes?
Yeah. So, and again, this is far, far off as far as the actual application and collegiate.
Just two guys
or,
having
or
a conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. But the idea behind personalized medicine is, rather than, I'm going to use pun intended, blanket statements here.
Do the best you can.
As opposed to just having like this blanket approach to, hey, we're treating these people with this medicine or these people with this particular medicine or rehab protocol or whatever else, being able to identify based on alleles, DNA composition, different omics that you might get, then you can start to take. So, for example, gut microbiota, can you start to take a look at individual characteristics of me versus you and start to understand, hey, Skip is going to respond better to this medicine than Chris will. So let's start to personalize their medical approach, essentially. So the idea being, you take that personalized medicine approach and apply it in the world of sport, which, as you know, you're a cyclist, is certainly nothing new, right? You have all these medical advancements and enhancements, right? No. That then find their way into sport, right? Not to go down the whole doping side of things, but you get the idea, right? And so, again, I'm speaking very broadly on that, and this is not my background whatsoever, but I think the...
Disclaimer noted.
Yes. The hard science, if you will, I enjoy that side as well, and I think those would be paths that I would very much like to explore kind of behind the scenes while we're still providing help to our coaches. How's that enough for a ramble there? Well,
that was so open-ended, I'm not sure what to do with it. Yeah. So, am I hearing you say you would like to take a personalized, applied sports science approach to the student-athletes that you work
yes,
with?
Yes, eventually.
I mean, is yeah. that kind of where you were going with that?
Eventually, yes. I think to a certain degree, well, we try to do
obviously
that.
Obviously, it would
everybody.
Be a process.
Yes.
So, you... Understood.
Yes.
But is that the conclusion to that ramble?
I think so, yeah. 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 I think to a certain degree, that's what we try to do every single day when we're doing, for example, the base stealing. We're individualizing strengths and weaknesses, all that other stuff. But in this regard, I'm more referring to taking a look at more of the hard science side of things. Right. So, again,
such as
the omics. Like, let's take a look at maybe their gut microbiota and see which probiotic they're going to respond best to, or and individualizing things in that way. Again, I'm going to pull back here because I'm going down a path that I am not an expert
in. I tend to not let people pull back. But.
And I am pulling back here because I will leave you to read that paper, but it has really sparked my interest in my mind to really start to say, hey, there's some cool possibilities here. I think we're a long ways from those. But I just want to try to educate myself on the front end to where we can maybe start to investigate that here in the not too distant future.
Well, I haven't read the paper.
Yeah.
Right. So
yeah.
There's my disclaimer.
Yeah.
But it's always an interesting challenge because as knowledge gets deeper and more nuanced, right, people begin to understand the nuanced ways in which those things can be applied. Right. Mm-hmm. So if we go back to your base stealing effort, we talked about three groups.
Yes.
And then as we talked about the second group, I was already ready beginning to break that up into, well, obviously there are going to be subgroups within that group.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a logical conclusion to all of that is just individualization.
Yes.
Which at a certain point may not even be necessary, right? Now we get into probability. right?
Mm-hmm.
If 90% of everybody responds well to probiotic A.
No doubt.
Right?
No doubt.
Now we just worry about the 10% potentially. So I'll read the paper. We can come back to a deeper discussion on that.
I would love that. And let me do quite a bit more reading.
So you need the question, though. Right? You will often talk about what is the question, right, that we want to answer.
Yeah.
So obviously you just read the paper. You have some energy toward that type of research.
Yeah.
The next step would be, would it not, what is the question? Like, what's the question you're going to end up looking at with that? It's not often I get your gears turning.
Yeah.
And it's apparent on your face.
Oh,
and
man.
I don't think that's the Malort talking.
You know, it's a great question, I think. So, yeah, you got me stumped. There, you have me stumped.
I'm hoping we'll do this again, so.
Yeah, you have me stumped. There are a lot of questions I would like to answer, none of which, particularly in that topic, I was just giving you kind of my flavor of the month right now.
Sure.
That I can really hit on at the moment. And I'm hoping to speak with Craig and John sometime soon. I've never spoken with them, but going to reach out to them soon and want to continue to dive down some of their papers and the past they've gone. And yeah, it's what I love, reaching out to people and learning from them. I sure as hell don't have it figured out. I can promise you that.
Not sure how any one person could.
Yeah.
Fair enough. So let me individualize a question for you. So you played soccer.
Mm-hmm.
At a reasonably high level. Are there any soccer-specific questions you'd find interesting to dive into? And let me add a little bit more into that. Mm-hmm. So one of the things I find interesting is so many of the people we work with, were former athletes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's oftentimes, and you can see it in their passion, a point where you can see that old player start to creep back in to their thought process. And I love it. Like, I have a hard time sometimes not thinking about things competitively or as an athlete, etc. So I'm curious if you have anything like that that will show up in your work day.
You know, I think.
Or maybe it's just when you're watching TV.
Yeah.
I suppose it doesn't have to relate directly back to.
I think in reference to kind of what you're talking about, I would say that my personal experience and background playing sport, whatever it is, whether it be soccer or Ironman or whatever, is rather than driving the conversation or driving the question of, oh, I'm really curious about that, it more, I think for me, helps me put context to things. You know, it just saying like, yes, his heart rate is high, or yes, his external load is high, but like, let me look at the scenario and say, hey, look, this is normal, or let him go, or whatever else it is. So put context to it. So let me give you an example. In our basketball practices, Coach Hoiberg has asked me to come to him or an assistant and let them know once our players reach a certain spot that we feel like, hey, there's a limit that we're going to have for this practice. Once they get to that point, to let them know. Well, I'm not naive enough to sit there and go, hey, look, they hit this point, they're in the middle of a really important scrimmage where they've been playing like shit all day and they need to work through things. Okay, I'm not going to go in there and say, hey, coach, pull Skip out of the practice, right? You know, like there's
you're not going to pull the ripcord,
right,
at that point.
There's a context there. Or, hey, I know practice is over in 7 minutes. And depending on how all that stuff goes, it's just kind of say, hey, look, like, let's put some context to this. This is a day in which we really need to get after it. We have 3 days until the game, whatever. Okay, fine, go. I'm going to use my expertise or my background, I should say, to put context to those scenarios. So rather than asking questions, I think I use it for contextual help in my day-to-day process. Does that answer your question? Probably not.
It was good information.
Yeah.
And, well,
so I, but to answer your question, I don't think I have direct questions that come up because of previous sporting experience necessarily. My previous sporting experience has driven me to get into this field.
Sure, sure.
But I don't think it drives my questions day to day.
It makes a lot of sense. Now, Luke Bradford, shout out to Luke, Kansas. We had a conversation. It'll be one of the first podcasts we release. And he brought up, and I think it's worth talking about a bit more, this idea of I can provide, or he can provide, you can provide, right, information to a coach around player fatigue, like a risk evaluation in terms of, you know, maybe is the team tired? Like, what kind of practice do we need to have? But at a certain point, there's a contextual analysis of needing to push through, right? Mm-hmm. A simple way to think about it is no one knows when a game is going to go into overtime.
Mm-hmm.
So at a point of overtime, no one's calling stop because everyone's tired.
Right.
So how do you dose pushing through in a way that helps you learn to deal with that? How do I play when I'm tired?
Mm-hmm.
Versus some sort of a risk assessment on, well, now I'm 5% more likely to pull a hammy.
Yeah. The way that I look at it a lot of times is one day, one practice, one whatever's not going to, hopefully, knock on wood, make or break an athlete, right? But it's more stringing things together. I actually, funny enough, I use with our athletes when we're talking about sleep, for example, I say, listen, it's not about one night. It's about how you put these things together. Okay. So if you slept really well for one night, that doesn't mean that you're good if you slept like shit for the other six nights. And I use the analogy. I said, listen, if you eat nothing but Skittles for 6 days, right? And then the night before, right before a pregame meal, you have a well-balanced meal, baked chicken, broccoli, whatever else that you want with it, right? Do you really expect your body to perform its best in that game? And they're like, no, of course not. I said, okay, exactly, right? It's about leading up to it, how you put all these things together. And so when you come to kind of like the how do you push, how do you do that, I think for us, or my approach to it anyway, is more of just I always use the analogy of the rumble strips, right? We're on the road, Coach Hoiberg in this example, Coach Bolt, you name it, Coach Cook, they know how to drive that bus, that team bus towards success, right? We're there to be the blind spots a little bit. Are there certain things that maybe they're missing because they have to focus on the road ahead that maybe we can catch as the support staff? And then the other side of things is, let's just stay on that road. And if we start to deviate, let's catch it when we hit the rumble strips and just quickly or very easily and smoothly get back onto the road, get back in our lane, right? What we want to do is let's catch it when we hit the rumble strips so we don't have to just yank it because we're about to hit a cow on the side of, you know, in the field to the side because we've gotten so far off road that, you know, hey, how's that for a Nebraska reference, by the way? Hit a cow on the side of the road. Some people won't. Maybe not as fitting for others.
I don't think that's that big of a stretch.
That's fair.
I think anybody.
But you get the idea, right?
People who have driven a car, I think they're okay with your cow.
Yeah, that's fair. So I just try to kind of keep the idea of rumble strips. We're going to maybe be on that road, right lane, left lane. It's going to switch up a little bit. But if we go a little bit too far to the right or a little bit too far to the left, let's just identify it early. No need to panic. Let's just easily get back on that road and we're fine. So I always use that analogy. So I don't freak out over one day. I don't freak out over one thing. It's just more of a, are we preparing them in the long haul? Are we still driving forward on that road or are we in park or going in reverse, right?
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a decent way to think about it.
Maybe an overly simplistic, but.
Well, there's a lot you can do with that analogy. I think most of it could probably work out.
Yeah. I've used it before.
I think we all assume so after hearing how smoothly it rolled off your tongue.
Yeah.
So in the short term, what's next for you? Like, I know recently you went out with the basketball team to Indiana. Are you going to kind of be working closely with the basketball team as that staff ramps up? Or what's kind of on your plate short term?
Yeah, so I've got a lot of projects going on in the lab right now. Like we mentioned, quite a few baseball things going on. I'm actually ramping up projects with track. Women's basketball is certainly doing a lot. I'm working personally quite closely with our men's basketball staff, kind of getting in some
free throw shooting contests with Coach Horberg.
I think he would beat me.
Was it horse that you used to play with the rest of the staff, or was it a free throw contest?
I did a free throw 3-point contest with our old assistant director of analytics in the lab. One of the benefits of having a half-court basketball goal,
absolutely,
or court in your lab, is a way to decompress a little bit. But no, I'm pretty sure that Coach Hoiberg could still probably shoot 90%+ from the free throw line.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. But no, so I'm working with them a good bit on trying to get some kind of sports science practices in place, from recovery testing to heart rate monitoring during practice. He used First Beat when he was with the Chicago Bulls. So
okay.
We got that when we were here, and which was great because it allowed me to kind of immediately walk in and start to speak his language. And communicate with them effectively kind of from the get-go.
Is that like from a – how did – so you said speak his language.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always interested in, did you meet in terms of using a sort of First Beat language? Was it an HRV science language? Mm-hmm. How did that
– it was more
First – I know it's nuanced.
Yeah, but. No, it was more First Beat.
Okay, familiarity with the product.
Yes, yes.
So some of that's going to be scientific metrics, but.
Absolutely, yeah. And so I knew certain things and communicating with him of what have you found to be useful in the past? What do you want to see on a day-to-day basis? And so I try to provide that to him every day after practice. And
what, if without spilling any
yeah.
inappropriate beans, like what are some of those metrics you're providing?
Yeah, I try to provide him with, so they do a recovery test. So I give him an idea of, hey, the team is X percent recovered today. Just be aware. And then I add individual notes of maybe individuals. Hey, this athlete has been trending down for the last few days. Just be wary of that kind of thing. And then we do the heart rate during practice as well, where he is familiar with a training effect number, which is kind of their main metric that they use. And he was familiar with that. So we provide that on a team scale. And then I, again, come in and I add additional context to that based on my experiences, based on maybe some other metrics that I'm kind of doing my own calculations with, that kind of stuff. So I put a little bit more context or... I don't mean to come back to the individualization side of things, but
that's where it takes you.
So that we try to, again, catch things. If they hit the rumble strips, no big deal. Let's identify it. Let's work on it. Let's come up with a way. Maybe this athlete's recovery is really poor. I'll speak with them about sleep or other factors.
Which of them? You'll speak to the athlete?
To the athlete. Yeah. Yeah. And kind of figure out, hey, can we get this thing back on track a little bit so that over the course of the season, maybe we don't break down. And, you know, it's with that staff, with him, it's they've been great to work with, but, you know, there's certainly a – or not a but, but it's also a – we're still learning each other. You know, he's brand new. He doesn't understand all that we can offer. There are different factors as well to where I need to understand what are his goals going into practices, all that stuff.
Sure.
And so it's been great to work with them and continue kind of learning and feeling each other out. So –
well, in our world, a lot of people talk about the process,
mm-hmm.
and under that is always the relationship as well. Yep. So, generally speaking, it's pretty nice when there's a commonality, like in this case, First Beat,
uh-huh.
and it just lets you build. So, you mentioned you look at some of that First Beat data. You know there are some things that Coach Hoiberg wants to see. And then you'll apply some other things that you know to that. Can you talk a little bit about what those might be? Like, what are some other things that you're looking at there? I know I'm getting a little bit deeper into it, but
yeah, I mean,
people
I think,
are going to find it interesting.
Yeah, no, I think, I mean, they're just, again, I don't think that anything we're doing is necessarily groundbreaking. It's
sure.
It's kind of the whole idea of, you know, I can give you the same ingredients as I give Martha Stewart, and she's going to make a hell of a lot better cake than you will, right? And so it's how you put all these. Maybe not. Pretty, or maybe you're a hell of a cook.
Hell of a cook. How hard is it to follow a recipe? Yeah. One joke I often make.
But yeah.
I digress.
But yeah, so there will be different factors that we'll take a look at.
Such as
just shrimp using Bannister's model and just saying, all right, here's an idea of training.
That's what I wanted to get to.
Yeah, here's an idea of training load as opposed to maybe just this training effect number. Or taking a look at in recovery, they'll give you a percent recovered, but then I may pull out the raw data and take a look at more of the HRV data and monitor that stuff over time and start to say, hey, look, you know, maybe today's practice was high as far as they had the highest training load they've had in the last 2 months based on the TRIMP value, for example. But we have an off day tomorrow. Let's just get with the athletic trainer, get with the strength coach and the nutritionist and make sure that we hit extra recovery practices and fuel them properly and all that other stuff. So again, have at it, no big deal. Let's just try to eliminate six of these days happening back to back to back to back.
Mitigating some risk.
Right.
Communicating well, making sure that communication gets to players.
Yeah.
Et cetera.
Yeah. But at the same time, we need to make sure that the athletes, you brought up overtime, right? We need to make sure that the athletes are exposed to a level of intensity
and here's
volume
where
and stuff.
Right. I understand.
Yeah.
You're trying to sort of, in this conversation, like, make sure you're being well-rounded. And there's a little bit of doublespeak in there, right?
Yeah, I get it. I get it.
A little bit of doublespeak.
I appreciate you calling me out on my game here.
Shout out to George Orwell. But what can you do?